Coming up, want to know the secret to successfully selling a premium $20 app? Well, today's guest is a professional actor who built an app specifically for actors, and he shares how being his best customer has led to his success. Also, if you're thinking about starting your own podcast, then listen to his tip about how to sound a bit more professional. All that and so much more.
The most action-packed content from the top mobile experts. This is the App Masters Podcast with Steve P. Young.
99designs has thousands of designers from all over the world ready to tackle your next design project. Visit 99designs.com/chat and get a $99 power pack of services for free. Would you like your app submitted to over 150 app review sites and receive guaranteed reviews? Preapps.com will tap into their extensive list of app review sources to guarantee the top publications review your app. Get 10% off this package along with all of Preapps marketing services if you use the promo code AppMasters. What is up, App Nation? This is Steve P. Young, founder of AppMasters.co. I've got a different kind of guest, and I'm super excited to talk to him because I think he can impart a lot of knowledge into podcasting, into just the way you present yourself and speech and talk. And he developed a pretty cool app called Rehearsal, and it's made for actors. But his name, let me introduce him before I keep rambling on. His name is David H. Lawrence the 17th.
He's nicely an actor. Done.
Thank you, my friend. He's an actor, VO artist, and teacher at VO2Gogo.com and creator of what I just said, Rehearsal, the app for actors. David, welcome to the show.
Thanks. I appreciate it very much.
David, you know, I started thinking about, because you're an actor. You've been on Heroes. You've been on one of my favorite shows, How I Met Your Mother. Mm-hmm. From your acting experience, what have you kind of parlayed that to? Because we're trying to talk about it, like, as an actor, you get a lot of no's, you get a lot of things. But how have you parlayed that into business? Like, I love your mindset. Talk me through that mindset that you have when you get a no from, like, a casting director.
Well, I think in general, actors tend not to treat their, what I call their acting practice. I like to elevate us to the level of a lawyer or a doctor or an engineer. You know, we have a practice. You know, we're an architect, right? We have a practice. And I think that a lot of actors tend to treat their practice like, you know, an art project. And the truth is, yeah, it's an art project. We have the art of acting that we have to deal with, but that's kind of the barrier to entry. That's kind of the speed bump you got to get over to get into the parking lot before you get into the building of being successful, right? And I think what happens is they very often and almost proudly reject the idea that they have to be good business people and good technicians when it comes to doing the work. All they have to worry about is the art. And it manifests itself in a lot of different ways. One of which is, you know, people will come to LA from major art drama schools, you know, Tisch in New York or Northwestern or wherever, London School of Drama. And they'll land at Hollywood and Vine and they'll kind of stand there and they're like, I'm here. You know, where's my agent? Where's my lead role? You know, like they have this attitude, like the art will carry them and the art won't. The art will not carry you. I'm sorry. Unless you're drop dead gorgeous. If you're drop dead gorgeous, all the rules don't apply. So that's a completely different thing. If you're a YouTube rap star or you've got some sort of thing where you've shown your cooch on, you know, some TMZ thing, that's different. That changes the rules. But in general, being a good business person and being a good technician with your tools is really important. And so when a customer says to you no and gives you a reason, that's a moment for learning. That's a teachable moment, right? They're saying, hey, your price isn't in my, you know, my bailiwick. What you're giving me isn't solving my problem. You know, I've got a better option somewhere else. Whatever it is, as actors, we tend, you know, some actors tend to take that very hard, that rejection very hard. I can't wait to find out what the result is of my work when I audition. If I get the job, great. Here's how I present it to my actor friends when I take them out for lunch. When I walk across the threshold in an audition, what I say to myself is, you know, I'm not going to get this job anyway. I'm just not. So I'm just going to have fun. I'm going to go in. I'm going to have it's another opportunity for me to act. I'm going to enjoy myself. I'm going to book the room. Mm. At the very least, I'll make a new friend. I'll meet a new contact. When I leave, I tear my script up, I throw it in the trash, and I don't think about it ever again. Sure, there are some exceptions. There are some auditions you go to and they're just lovely or horrible. And, you know, those stick with you. But for the most part, I like forget about it. And then there's that pleasant surprise should you get it. So 72% of the time, and I keep track of this stuff, wow, a little shy of 72% of the time, I am absolutely correct. I did not get the job. Mm-hmm. So I can rest assured that was truthful. It was perfect. I was right, you know. But 28% of the time, I am unequivocally, irretrievably incorrect, and I get the job. Now, I will tell you, the 28% of the time is about 20 times as often as the average union actor here in LA. So I get booked a lot more often than most people do. And, you know, I was wrong. I was totally wrong. But I win anyway because right. I got the part, right? So there's a healthy way of looking at things, and there's an unhealthy way of looking at things. And I think that in terms of business, being aware of what your customers' needs are, and in my case, my customers are the writers and the producers and the, you know, for my acting skills, my customers are also the other actors that buy my app. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm very aware of what their needs are because in this very rare case, I am my customer.
Right.
You know, usually business people are given the advice, you are not your customer. Well, in this case, I am a very, very clear exception to that rule, because if nobody ever bought my app again, and it's a $20 app, it's an expensive app, but if nobody ever bought it again and I could use it, I would, because it makes me a better actor and I can compete on a higher level. So anyway, I think it was a long answer.
No, I love that approach. And I think that's what I wanted question. To kind of talk about with you was, I do love that approach. And if you're talking in baseball terms, like .280 batting average, which is what you're winning on, that's a great average to have.
Well, the skill set required to hit a ball is a lot more difficult than the skill set required to act. And I know there are people that will disagree with me, but I urge you to go see any film with an actor that you don't like, and you'll agree with me.
You know, something I want to ask you, and I think we have a mutual friend just from looking at LinkedIn, Andy Mack, but I use him for a bunch of VO stuff. The one thing, my dream has always to be a game show host, and you're the first podcaster. Okay. Right.
You and look I was up the announcer on The Price is Right.
That's awesome. So give me some tips. Like
for about a month.
What are some good tips? I was able tips?
To say, come on down. It's a new car. You know,
that's awesome.
I get to do all that.
What are some good
tips?
You
make a great game show host. You should go on the Game Show Network and get a job.
How do you do that? I mean, how would you ever do that?
Put yourself on tape, get a hosting reel. You know, how do you get a job in any form of performance? And in my voiceover teaching practice, I do an actual class called Mutual Muscles. You know, everybody thinks that various forms of performing are so different. Actors on camera will go, oh, voiceover? Oh, I can't. I don't even know where to start with that. Well, you've already started because you're a storyteller. Mm-hmm. So the technical requirements of working a mic versus working a camera or a live audience, yeah, there are some small minor differences which you can, you know, deal with in a half an hour. But the idea that it's so foreign to what you're already doing, I completely reject. When you are a performer, and you are a performer, you can perform anywhere if you get a little bit of coaching or training in the area that you're not familiar with. Because the inner mutual muscles that you use to tell those stories are just as effective whether you're a game show host or a host of Entertainment Tonight or a news anchor or a creepy evil villain on Heroes or a commercial voiceover person, yeah, or the person that does those prompts when you call the bank and they say, thank you for calling Bank of America. You know, that was the number one category of voice work for me for almost 30 years doing IVR, interactive voice response prompts. And, you know, people that would call AOL would get mad at me 4.5 million times a day in the heyday when they were this shit.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, is this not safe?
No, that's okay. Stuff? I like it.
Okay, good. Yeah. You know, I mean, it was crazy. I would be in restaurants and I would be ordering and the table next to me, the guy would turn around and go, "Are you the guy that answers the phone at AOL?"
That is awesome.
I hate you. I hate you. Anyway, the point is, no matter what you're doing, you're performing, you're using those same skills in any area. And so, you know.
I've got a couple of listeners, Gary and Romeo, who have committed to starting their own very podcasts.
Their own what?
Their own podcasts.
Okay.
And from, so listen up, guys. This is, David was one of the first, I mean, you, it says the first podcaster. What advice would you have?
That's necessarily true, but I'm often given that appellation as the first or one of the first podcasters back in the mid 90s before podcasting was called podcasting. Mm-hmm. In the early 90s. Remember when Real Networks, you were probably not born yet.
No, I remember that. Yep.
So Real Networks came out with, they were called Progressive Networks at that time. And they came out with the very first streaming technology. But inherent in that streaming technology was also hard file playback technology. So you could actually send somebody a .ra file, which is real audio, as opposed to a .rm file, which was the streaming.
Yes, I remember all this
document that you needed to say where the .ra file was. You could just send them a .ra file, and they could play it right on their hard drive if they had a real player install. So I was one of the very first people to do that. My radio show was on Sundays only, and it was a technology show about technology. But all the good stuff happened during the week. So what I wanted to do was stay in touch with my clients, you know, my listeners during the week. So every day I would send out a 10-minute or so rundown of what happened in technology news with this light little, you know, reminder, listen to me on Sunday at noon or whatever your local, you know, noon Pacific. And about 3 weeks into it, I get a phone call from Geico. And I'm like, I have Geico insurance, but this isn't the number that, you know. So this guy says, "Hey, we've been listening to your little radio show that you have on the internet." Because what I would do is I would send the file via email.
Right.
And I had to make the file smaller when encoded for the internet than 1 megabyte. Because in those days, AOL, Excited Home, I remember Hotmail, I don't know. They all had limits, just like they do today, but much smaller on the file size of attachments. And I had to actually figure out how long I could make the podcast so that once it was encoded, it was 999K. Mm. And that time, by the way, is 10 minutes and 43 seconds using Real Audio's first, you know, cheap, you know, lowest level encoder. I didn't care what the quality of the audio was, as long as you could understand what I was saying. It's kind of like AM radio, right? So he calls me and he says, "We've been listening to it. We love it. Would you consider taking advertising?"
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, yeah, because, you know, I don't like sit there and go, no advertising on my technology radio show that I'm sending out via email. No, I couldn't possibly do that. The art would be sullied. You know, that wouldn't be me. So I'm like, yeah, sure. And he goes, "Well, how much would you charge? How many listeners do you have?" And at that point, I had some like 6,000 people on my list. And it took me almost 4 hours to send the thing out every day because, you know, I had to go out. So, and I pulled this right out of my butt. I said, "I don't know, $500 a day."
Yeah.
Done.
I love it.
What? Yeah. I mean, you know, this was even before the .com boom was like people were giving you $10 million for notes on a napkin. You know, this was like, wait a minute. What you say? I should have asked for 5,000. You know, your negotiator goes, "What did I do?" But then it was like, you know, $2,500 a week for years. And then other people wanted it as well. And so, you know, not only was I one of the first podcasters, I certainly was one of the first sponsored and money making podcasters. So that's how that happened. And from there, that ended up, when I started doing the show nightly, about in the late 90s, I started doing the show every night. And I would do the podcast for 10 minutes and 43 seconds after the show where people could do not safe for work. You know, we had no restrictions. Mm-hmm. And it ended up, I had over 12,000 episodes of that podcast. I retired in 2007 from radio wow. just to do on-camera, you know, on-camera acting and voiceover only. And so, yeah.
That's awesome. Well, the one thing that I hear from beginning podcasters is that I don't like the sound of my voice. I don't like any of this stuff. Do you, you know, one of the best tips I've gotten, and I study, you know, I really do want to be a game show host. So I study a lot of the great game show hosts. There's always like a pause, like a dramatic pause. And they, you know, they like to fluctuate their voice a little bit more to make it a little more dramatic. Are there any tips that you have for those who are like, I don't like my voice, and how do I sound more professional like David?
So thank you. But so here's the thing. Everybody hates the sound of their voice. It's a universal thing, and it's a physical thing. It's right. it's not like, oh, we as humans hate our voice. We hear our voice when we talk normally two ways at the same time, slightly out of phase with each other. We hear our voice convectively through the air, off the walls, and back to our ears. Full fidelity, right? But at the same time, we're also hearing our voice conductively through the muscles and the skin and the bones of our head. And you can hear that if you put your hands over your ears like this and talk, you'll hear a very bassy, low, non-treble, non-mid-range version of your voice that is combined with the full fidelity version of your voice when you hear yourself. And so you hear a deeper, richer, more mellow version of your voice when you're just talking. The moment you hear yourself on tape, you're only hearing the conductive version, all that bass from the convective version, all that bass from the conductive version gone. So you, instead of thinking, oh, I don't hear that conductive version anymore, you think, oh, I sound like Mickey Mouse, or oh, I sound awful. And the truth is, you sound great. And the moment you realize that, you know, this is just a physical thing, you can't do anything about it, and your voice is actually great, you tend to not worry about it so much. But everybody has that same sort of, the first time they're recorded, they go, ugh, what is that?
Right.
So the idea of what you put as the pause, you won't hear me say or ah or like or you know or so as often as other people, because I'm one of those people who uses silence as audio white space. So when you have a great designer, you know, you'll see the outlines of things, the margins of things, the distance between things more artfully designed than somebody just throwing something on a page. And when you get to know how to use silence, people will wait. If you're telling them something and you pause and then you continue with your sentence, that silence is very jarring. It makes them lean in and make sure you're okay, that you're not sick, right, that you're not, you know, you didn't hurt yourself. It's like when you are listening to the radio in your car and the record runs out or the DJ doesn't have the mic open and you get this dead air, you're instantly like, did we get bombed? What happened? Because you're used to that continuity of sound. Right. And so it's the same thing when you're talking to somebody. If you're at a party and you're always concerned that that person is going to be talking over your shoulder, looking for something more interesting, someone more interesting to talk to at the party, don't try to hold their attention with, yeah, so, you know, there, you know, all these vocal bridges that you hear all the time, especially in California, you know, yes. When somebody says, could you please answer this question about that? You'll instantly hear people go, so, well, you know, they're saying, look, I don't think you're going to stay tuned in to what I'm going to say. So I'm going to make sure that you hear me say something that keeps you connected with me until I can get my thoughts together. If you were to sit there and go, the reason for that is the whole room would hush and go silent, right? But we've lost this art in this, these vocal bridges that we have, right? So did that answer your question?
I loved it. I mean, that's one of the best tips. I was listening to the Public Speaker podcast, and it was at a time when I didn't have too many fillers, but I did have some fillers. And she said, just pause. If you feel like saying or us, and you'll see the same thing for me. I rarely say those filler words. And I may say, you know, a lot, but at the same time, like that's one thing that I've worked hard to get rid of. And I'm laughing the whole time you're talking about it, because if I could just tell somebody, like at a Starbucks, they say, what do you want? And they say, I'm like, if you just pause and if you just thought about it beforehand, well, you would not be saying that.
There is one exception to that. And that is when somebody asks you a question.
Yep.
you want to let them know that you heard the question and you're considering your answer. So when somebody says to you, okay, what would you like? You know, you're the barista or the guy at the cash register at Starbucks. Let me think. Or there's so much to choose from.
Right.
Or that's a great dress under that smock you're wearing. Let me think about what I want to drink. You know, nobody is that considered. And it's considerate to them. It's like, anyway, we're getting far afield
from what we
want about the app. So
yeah, let's talk about the app. I want to get into this. And you got a ton of great press from this app. And I want to talk to you about how you were able to do that. Before I do, I've got a couple of sponsors that I got to thank. This is just the first one. Preapps.com. Now, Preapps will, if you're looking to get reviews, just like David has done for Rehearsal, getting reviews on these top app review websites is critical to getting downloads and getting more exposure for your app. So if you want your app submitted to over 150 app review sites and receive guaranteed reviews, well, preapps.com will tap into their extensive list of over 150 app review sources to guarantee that the top publications review your app. Through their expertise and their strategic relationships, they can guarantee some results. Each review is published by independent sources on popular review websites, and they all focus on very captive readers. Now, the one thing that I love about this is Preapps provides a report of all the sites, including links to the guaranteed reviews within 7 days. And because they are a sponsor of the show, and because they love this show, and because they know that you are awesome app developers out there, they're giving you 10% off any of these packages, so they can do this and video production and ASO. If you use the promo code AppMasters, you get 10% off any of their packages. So if you want these guaranteed reviews, go to preapps.com, use the promo code AppMasters. All right, David, what made you want to build Rehearsal?
So I'm at my agent's office on a Monday afternoon. I'm in the middle of the second season of Heroes. And while I'm sitting at his desk, he gets a phone call from the casting office for the show Community. I don't know if you know Community.
Yeah.
Okay. And they want to book me for an audition for the next day. He says, oh, he's working on set. Can he come in on Wednesday? And they're like, no, we're going to make our choices tomorrow. If he can, and this is 3:30 in the afternoon on Monday. They said, if he can get down here by the close of business today, which is 5 o'clock, we'll put him on tape and we'll just send him to producers. We know him. We love him. He's already on Heroes, so he's pre-vetted by the network. So I'm handed a 5-page audition set of sides, including a piano piece. And I'm told I have to go on audition by 5 o'clock. Now I'm about a half an hour away from Paramount Pictures, which is where the audition was going to be held. So I go into my car. Normally what I used to do is I would come home and I would sit in front of my Macintosh and I would use my studio and I would record my lines, leaving room for my lines and saying the other person's lines. And then I put them in iTunes and I'd just have it on repeat and I'd keep speaking the lines until I got them down. And that always worked for me really well, which is exactly how the app works. You pull your script into the app and then you scroll it as you read it. And when it plays back, it actually plays back your audio and the scrolling. So it kind of looks like a teleprompter.
Oh, wow.
And so it's at the very same speed that you scrolled it because it's recording your finger movements at the same time. So I don't have that app at this point. So I'm sitting in my agent's parking lot and I pull up Voice Memo, which is a built-in app on iOS devices. It does not have a repeat function. If it did have a repeat function, there's a very good chance I never would have developed Rehearsal. So thank you, Apple, for not putting a repeat function in Voice Memo. So here's the problem with Voice Memo and the 101 freeway here in Los Angeles. There's no hard button on the iPhone to play. It's a soft button on the screen. And I'm weaving in and out of traffic on the 101 and trying with my hand on the phone to find that play button to play it over again so that I can learn my lines on my way to Paramount. And I felt like I was in danger. I'm like, there has to be an app that does this better than what I'm doing right now. I get to Paramount. I'm driving through the gate and I get a phone call from my agent saying, don't worry about it. They wrote the part out.
Oh, wow.
So I learned all this stuff and it wasn't necessary. But what I came away with was, I wonder if there's an app for learning lines. And I found a couple of things that were written by developers that had no idea how professional actors worked in Los Angeles. The one thing that makes this app so popular and so good is it's built around the process, the business process of acquiring auditions, preparing for auditions, acquiring work, preparing for work, and doing the work in the audition space and on set. So how we get our scripts via PDF. How we actually learn the lines, what we do for auditions versus work. All of these things are built into the app, whereas people who have developed these apps outside of that space, they think they know what actors do, or they're a local community theater actor in Paducah, Kentucky, and they think they know what actors do. But in my case, I think the reason for the success of this app is because it takes what we do in the real world with paper and markers and a recording device and where we're going, the process, and distills it onto an app that puts it all in one place for you and helps you learn better and faster. So, you know, if that hadn't happened, there's a very good chance I never would have developed the app, but that's how it started. And when I started to use it, I noticed that I was getting better and better at auditioning, better and better at doing the work when I would get the job, and other people wanted to know what I was doing. And I was planned on releasing it as an app. When I first started it, I learned a very, very good lesson in value versus price. So if you want to talk about that, I'd be happy
to. Yeah, go for it. Because I think that is something I wanted to talk about. It was like $20. How did you come up with the price? And then, yeah.
So it wasn't $20 to begin with. To begin with, it was a free download with a 30-day trial, unlimited usage. And then after that, it was either per app, per month, or per year. And the in-app prices for per app or per script was 99 cents. Per month was $20 and the per year was 200. And the way I figured that was the average SAG actor, the average union actor only gets between 5 and 10 auditions a year. So if they were to spend another $5 or $10 per script, that's not a lot, right? It would help me, you know, keep the app going and so on. If you get a part where you're the top of show guest star, which is like the main guest actor that comes in for that episode only or for a couple of episodes, the scale rate for that is about $8,000 for the job. And so $20, if you're going to be working for a couple of weeks, that's noise. So I figure, okay, per month, $20. And then if you're a series regular, you're making at least $29,000 an episode. And some make a lot more, as you know, from news reports. So $200 a year, that's noise too. But what I found out was that actors felt like they were being nickeled and dimed. Every time they wanted to use the app to pull in another script, they had to pay more money. And it wasn't like, oh, I'll pay this money gladly. It was like, why am I being charged for this? So I was making coffee money every day, $5, $10 every day. For the first 9 months that the app was out in 2009, it came out in December of 2009. So in December of 2010, after the iPad had been introduced and other things had happened, I held my breath and I said, if I want to make a go of this, I need to figure out how to do this better. And also listening to my customers saying they didn't like to be nickel and dimed. Okay, I'm going to charge $20 one time. It's easy to say. It's easy to pay. It's less than a headshot. It's less than a casting workshop. It's less than a private coaching session. Mm-hmm. It's less than an acting class. And it's a tool that they could use then forever. And I'm like, okay, if I sell one of these a day, I'll make four times as much money as I did if I, you know, it blew up. I went from making coffee money to making mortgage money.
Wow.
And it did so because the perception of the price took it from being a toy to some people because they could download it for free and then they could review it and they would trash it because they weren't actors and they didn't understand how it worked. They took it from being a toy to being a professional tool. And that $20 was looked at as an investment in their career, one time, great, cheap, less than lunch. And it stopped all of those reviews from people who weren't actors, didn't understand what it was all about, would trash it with a one-star rating as they deleted it off their phones, right? Because they used to have it so you'd rate it as you deleted it.
Right.
Back in the day. That's right. Can't believe I'm saying back in the day about apps.
I know.
But anyway, that really changed everything. How you price your stuff, especially for developers who are doing paid apps, you have to look at your marketplace. You have to look at how they perceive your app and what it is. If it's a game, if it's 99 cents, well, you got a whole set of market pressures that are different from me with a very specialty type app that has very few competitors. And the competitors that I have suck. Mm-hmm. They suck so hard, other apps blow to equalize the pressure. That's how bad my competitors suck. So that was just my way of making them feel bad. How'd I do? Creepy evil villain. Okay. So anyway.
You can tell you're an actor.
And it's worked out really well. I mean, there are people that still go, 20 bucks for an app? I thought apps are supposed to be free. You know, to people who are like, $20 is a bargain. You should raise the price. And we're actually doing some things with the next rev that is going to change a little bit about how it works and make me a little more money, but make actors money as well. They're going to be able to use the app to provide their services to others as readers.
This was your first app, I'm assuming, right, David?
Oh, it's my only app.
Okay.
I mean, I have lots of ideas for other apps, right, but it's my only app. And the other apps that I'm doing have nothing to do with acting, that I'm thinking about.
Well, to the listener out there who's kind of working on their first app, what would you say is some of the key lessons that you learned through building your first app?
If you think it's hard to find a developer, you're absolutely correct. It is. I mean, iOS developers are enjoying a very interesting time in history, just like Ruby developers did a few years ago. The most arrogant, dismissive, expensive, crappy practitioners are out there ready to take your money. And even the ones that are good are expensive, but don't necessarily respond the way you'd like them to. I've been very lucky. The first developer I had was a Heroes fan. He was great. His name is Brian. He's actually in the management of the Game Developers Association. So he's really good at what he does. He made the app look beautiful. He made it work great. And I'm really thankful for his contributions. His company got bought, so he couldn't work on the app anymore. And the developers that I'm using now are slow and, but I feel like they're taking direction well and they're being managed well. And I think that the end result is going to take a lot longer than we both originally thought it would take, but it's going to be really good when it's done.
Where did you find those developers?
So there's a company in the UK called Smart Apps. Mm-hmm. And James is just great. He has a team of developers that he uses and puts on projects, and that's who's doing my app development now. I went through a number of other app developers between my original developer now and had mixed results with them. But these guys are kicking butt, and the app looks great. I'm on, alpha 20.74 or something like that.
Nice. Well, the other thing I have a researcher who did a little bit of research about the app. You've been featured on USA Today, Fast Company, 148 apps. I mean, Variety, a lot of the, you know, like perfect for the audience that you're trying to reach for.
Yeah.
How have you been able to get the word out?
So I don't go looking for PR. It's always been very surprising to me when it happens. And I'm not really looking for PR in an outlet like the New York Times, even though I got in there, USA Today, I got in there. Mostly it's actors talking about their experience with the app. Big, well-known actors. So, for example, do you watch Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
No, I don't. I know. Okay,
we are done. We'll find somebody else to interview.
Erase this.
You watch any of the Marvel films?
I do, of course. Yeah, Batman.
You know who Agent Coulson is?
Agent Coulson. Who's Agent?
He's the agent that was always trying to get Tony Stark to take a meeting.
Oh yes, he died. I mean, sorry.
This is why you have to watch Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Okay. Anyway, Clark Gregg, who's the actor who plays that part, was one of my very first users. He was a beta tester. I have got a bunch of union actors together and asked them to beta test, and all of them still use the app. They all love it. And they talk about it all the time. He was interviewed by USA Today about what technology Agent Coulson uses.
Yeah.
So he talked about driving around in his Tesla, listening to his lines with this app called Rehearsal, and went through the whole thing. And Juliana Margulies, who's the star of The Good Wife on CBS, she went off on how great the app was in an interview for The Hollywood Reporter. Do you know who Donald Logue is? Do you watch Gotham?
Oh, I try to, but no.
Okay. He plays the rough and tumble partner with the hat, but he's been in everything. And he wrote this amazing review. If you go to my app's reviews on the iTunes store, he wrote this insanely amazing review about how the app helped him produce or be a part of five series at once. Wow. He was in Sons of Anarchy. He was in Vikings on the History Channel. He was on Vikings for the BBC. He was on Law and Order. He was the captain for a while. And then he was on Law and Order SVU. And then he is now on Gotham. And he said, at one point, I was working on all five at the same time. And I'm like, that's pretty selfish, actually. but then he wrote this great review. And that's how it happens a lot of times is an actor that's well known will say something nice about it. And that sort of adds this testimonial that I didn't ask for. Right. I he called me and he said, this is great. And I said, go say something on the iTunes store. He said, what can I do for you? So there is this notion that if you seek out press, it's going to be helpful to you. And there's no reason why you shouldn't seek out press. And there's no way of knowing whether it will be helpful or not.
Right.
But if you get a radio interview or if you get a quick mention in an article and you don't see any bump in your sales, don't get upset about that. You just have to have sort of a body of exposure and a body of people talking about your app to really get it out there and to really understand it. So the answer is I didn't go for anything.
I love
it. You know, it all kind of happened. I never send out press releases. I don't use, you know, a service like, you know, go get great reviews. What's the name of the smart reviews or what's the
pre-apps?
I'm sorry. What is it?
Preapps.com.
Preapps.com. Okay. So I don't use a service like that. I don't do any of that stuff. I'm not saying you shouldn't. I just don't. So I don't know what you can learn from my stuff other than get celebrities to use it.
Yeah.
But, you know.
So. It looks like it's a niche app and it solves a real need. I mean, that seems to be the big takeaway. App,
and I can tell you that I've seen articles and reports. I don't know when you are asked, do people make money with apps? Mm-hmm. What do you tell them? I tell them it's a very bifurcated market. Mm-hmm. There are people that make lots of money with apps, and then there are people who barely pay for their yearly subscription to the Apple developer,
right?
You know, thing.
I say the same thing. Yeah, it's hard. That's what I say. It's very hard.
Yeah. So it hasn't been hard for me.
Right.
I mean, it makes me millions of times more money than I ever thought I'd make with the app.
That's great.
And it's a niche, but it's a niche that is visible and public and is filled with people who are well known.
Right.
So I have some advantages with this app that others may not have. I couldn't tell you how to make a game app successful. I don't know. Talk to Gary Rosenzweig or talk to Brian about that, but I don't know. I feel like I fell into a bed of manure and came up smelling like roses. So.
I love the analogy, but I think that is the key takeaway for me is like, one is if you build something that caters to a market, right, that really needs it, and you're the best customer for this app. I mean, you know what you need from it and you know the price point, you know, you rattle off like it's cheaper than a headshot, cheaper than all these other things. And you said, hey, this is great. And you can,
these are only things that these are things that my customers have told me. I mean, I kind of thought that when I thought the only thing that I thought was, okay, if I'm not going to make it free, what am I going to make it? You know, I'm not going to make it 99 cents.
Right.
Because that wouldn't pay for my development. It's a professional tool. $20. That was the sum and substance of the wisdom of that choice, right? But then when it worked and I heard actors telling me what they did in their head, it was very similar math. It's like, okay, $20 is less than this, and this. It's more than that, but it's worth it. You know, it kind of fell into that nice area, and there were no outside pricing forces working on me where another competitor was $10 or $50. So there wasn't any sort of jockeying around with how much it was. Everybody else insists on remaining free and they get what they pay for. So, yeah.
I love the takeaways of it. So I want to thank my last sponsor before we hit the big finish, and they are my friends at 99 Designs. They were the very first sponsor.
I love 99 Designs.
I love you, David.
I love 99 Designs. I've done like 7 contests on 99 Designs. I love them.
That's awesome. I love hearing that. And this is why I love doing these live reads, because frankly, it helps with my editing time. And it also lets you kind of hear it from the guests because people are actually using the site. So with 99 Designs, you can get your app design. I've gotten app icons, whole apps design. What have you gotten designed there, David?
Ebooks, covers, advertisements. I haven't needed to have anything on the app design because I haven't, you know, updated it in a while, but I haven't had to. But everything, you know, 99 Designs is one of those sites where you go and you see a level of quality that you don't see at some of the other design sites, for hire sites, certainly not Fiverr. You know, 99 Designs is just, it's just in a class by itself.
I love it. So 99 Designs, if you're not familiar, they connect business owners with a community of thousands of graphic designers. Whether you're looking for a new app or a logo, responsive website, or what David got, ebook, covers, banner ads, whatever you need, they can bring your idea to life. The process is fun, fast, affordable, and backed by 100% satisfaction guarantee. See for yourself. Visit 99designs.com/chat and get a $99 power pack of services for free. That means more designers competing for your business. 99designs.com/chat. David, this has been absolutely amazing, but let's go to the big finish. What is your favorite mobile app?
Rehearsal. I wish I could be more creative than that. Okay, so there's two apps that I'm in all the time. The Gmail app and Rehearsal. I would say if you pressed me that late at night, I'm in the Hasbro slots app and the Double Down Casino app just to like relax.
I love that.
But yeah, I would say, and oh, there's a new app that I really love called Word Swag. Do you know that app?
No.
Word Swag, WORDSWAG. Okay. It's building memes. You know those meme graphics?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You build them in an app, and it spits it out. It sends it to you in email, and they're awesome. They are just great. I think the developer's name is Ben, if I'm not mistaken, because I had an issue with it, and I sent them a tech support question. I bought the upgrade, and it was trying to get me to do something to get to a design. I'm like, hey, I paid already. You told me I'd have all the designs. And he's like, that's fine. That's fine. So it's really cool. And I'm using them when I do articles, almost every day for my, voiceover practice. And in particular, one of the articles was bring your brand to the party, no matter what the breakdown says. And that's kind of code for no matter what it says in that audition sheet that you get, make sure you bring your brand. You know, don't worry so much about what it says. Don't, you know, don't violate it, but make sure you're coming through because everybody else is going to try and figure out what they want. So I went to the WordSwag app and I built a little block meme thing that said, bring your brand to the party, no matter what the breakdown says. And it's one of the most, it's like the new thing that I'm doing now. It's one of the most read posts that I have. And part of it is, you know, people quoting from the thing and grabbing it as wallpaper and things like that. So Word Swag is really cool. I like that. So, you know, there you go.
I love it.
Yeah.
Just for fun, give us a half-baked idea for an app, something you wouldn't mind someone else working on.
So I had this idea for an app called Boilerplate. And I actually found that somebody had kind of done it enough that I didn't need to do it. Do you ever notice how when you want to respond to somebody, in my case, it's customer support. If somebody says something's wrong with the app or wrong with my website for Vivio to Gogo, it's often the same thing that other people have said. And so I craft nicely, you know, hey, let me help you with this, not just quickly dashing off the response over and over and over again. I use an app on my Macintosh called Type It For Me. Mm-hmm. And there's an app on, and I wanted that kind of thing on my iPhone. So that I could just type in a quick, you know, set of characters and it would spit out this big long thing. And there were some apps that tried to do that. And I thought, okay, how about a keyboard? Mm. You know, an alternate keyboard that you could fill with these things. And all you had to do was tap the alternate keyboard and then, you know, tap in what you wanted it to say. So, Text Expander kind of does that on the iOS. But what I wanted to do is a thing called Boilerplate. Boilerplate's a word that means insertable text in contracts and in agreements. And I started to work on it, and then I found this other one. So if anybody can do it more elegantly, I think that's a great idea because it'll really help productivity of customer support people like me who aren't you know, don't have a customer support team. I'm the support for rehearsal. So that's what I was thinking.
I love that. I use canned responses in Gmail. I love
it. So canned responses are great, but they don't work on your iOS device.
Right, I know. I'm with you.
Yeah.
I know. I feel the need too. What advice would you give anyone looking to build a mobile app?
Quadruple, quintuple, sextuple your timeline for when you think it's going to be ready. And as the app is coming to its final stages of development and you're doing beta testing, really start to think about the marketing efforts and the promotion efforts that you're going to give to the app when it's released. And you're taking advice from a shoemaker who's barefoot, because I never do that, but you should, because that moment, that one, you know, fulcrum moment when you have the app and it's new and then you're excited about it, that's when you have the energy to do a really strong push and a really accurate push. And rather than kind of doing it on the fly, take the time to think about it during those last 3 months. Seed your potential population with people who are people who will talk about it for you. You know, don't just send it to your friends. Send it to influencers. Yeah. And don't worry if your app doesn't get a big, huge bump in sales because you got mentioned in a press organ. It doesn't usually happen that way.
Love it. If the audience wants to learn more about you and say thank you for coming on and learn more about some of the products that you have, where would they go?
So the website for the app is called rehearsaltheapp.com, because rehearsal.com is owned by somebody in the Virgin Islands and they want 12 grand for it. You know, and I'm cheap. So you can also email me. My name, davidlawrence@gmail.com or davidhlawrencexvii@gmail.com. Either one will get to me. And if you want to learn more about voiceover stuff, come to vo2gogo.com. Vo, the numeral 2, G-O-G-O, vo2gogo, vo2gogo.com.
Love it. David, thank you so much for coming.
When is this going to air? When will this be on the air?
Yeah, let me pull up real quick. I've got a couple. Well, I have to make it less than 1 megabyte. I have it for the 26th.
Of January?
Yep.
Okay. So last week, my new show, Bella and the Bulldogs, debuted on Nickelodeon.
Oh, nice.
So, if you saw it, great. If you haven't seen it yet, check it out. Saturday nights, 8 o'clock Eastern and Pacific. It's a great show about a girl, the most beautiful girl in school, most popular girl in school, gets put in the position of quarterback for her high school football team. And it's in Texas, where they take football very seriously.
Yep.
So you'll enjoy it. It's a live action sitcom on Nickelodeon.
Cool. I got to check that out. Bella and the Bulldog. Definitely.
It'll be on January 17th, or it was on January 17th.
Got it. I see what you did there.
Whenever you saw this.
I love it. David, thank you so much for coming on and doing this. Really appreciate it. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you at the next chat.
Thanks for listening to the App Masters podcast. For show notes and amazing app marketing content, check out appmasters.co.